A public park.
The Internet, 1996 World Exposition. A World's Fair for the Information Age.
On this Expo Radio, we'll be going back to Eau Claire, Michigan, and the orchards of Tremendous Fruit, Inc. Herb Teichman's going to tell us about enjoying apples, red versus green apples, and how to store your apples.
Who was the first one to find the red delicious? Who was the first one to identify the golden delicious? Or some of the old antique apples like Cobalt Blanc, French apple. Who was the first? These questions came to my mind, and after looking at the margins of a seed catalog that my father had left after his passing, I took it upon myself to find some of these varieties that he'd indicated he'd seen as a youngster. And in doing that, I collected 40, 50 different varieties. I traveled around the Midwest collecting scion wood. That means a piece of wood from a tree known to produce a certain variety. And then I would graft that onto one of our trees, and I had several trees with many varieties on it. Watched them produce, and then I met a fellow who was equally interested, and also a nurseryman. And he had already got a collection, so we exchanged these two collections, and we met a third man. And so it just kind of snowballed, and finally we got to a point where we had over 200 varieties of apples, and now we produce in excess of 200 varieties of apples. At first, we planted 200 varieties, mostly North American and European origin. Then we got involved in some of the Asian varieties and found that they were very, very nice. There's some awfully nice selections coming out of the Asian area. Japan, New Zealand, Australia, areas like this. And now we've got quite a number of them as well.
Herb, do you remember what was the first apple type, the first old-fashioned or whatever type of apple that you collected?
Well, I would say the Baldwin was one of that interested me. In fact, as when I first got into farming, I had purchased an orchard that had 19 varieties of apples in it. And it was an older gentleman who was retiring that I purchased his farm. And when I sold that farm, I just made a vow that I wasn't ever going to get mixed up with apple varieties like that again, because it was so uncomfortable to harvest various varieties and keeping them separate and trying to merchandise the different varieties. At that point, 30, 40 years ago, there were two or three varieties that were most important. McIntosh, Red Delicious, Golden Delicious, Winesap, there were a few like that. And nowadays, though, folks have reached out. We were getting so much international travel that people are bringing these requests with them from the Asia and from Europe. We have quite a new nucleus of folks coming in here from the Chicago area that looking for the Asian selections. And so we're getting into them more. But my first apple that I tried and liked was the Baldwin. And that Baldwin apple, believe it or not, was the number one in production in the United States at the turn of the century. It was a short-lived number one position, but it was there. And I remember having that on that farm that I purchased some years ago, trying it, liked it. It was not very good looking. It was a kind of an unusual, very masculine looking apple. It wouldn't sell today on the market today because we're using so many cosmetic advantages. We have the waxing, we have indirect lighting, soft music, air conditioning, many things that are involved in the sale of an apple in the supermarket today. And here at Tremendous Fruit Farm, we're trying to uncover all that cosmetic and leave it as it was from the tree.
One of the things I did when I did a little reading about this before I came up, but one of the things that struck me was there was a big change in the number of apples that most people in America were using between, it looks like, maybe 1910, 1920, when there were many varieties being used. And today, in your average supermarket, you don't see that many varieties. What do you attribute that change to?
Well, the cost of shelf space in the supermarket, very valuable. Every square foot or inch, in fact, is measured, and they know the turnover, the volume that goes through, and the return on the investment. And they only in a few delis or unusual stores, like ours possibly, that would venture to handle a bushel of Cobalt Blanc. You know, that Cobalt Blanc is a beautiful apple in its way, but people today do not recognize it. It has an unusual shape, and it's not known to be an apple. We have an image of apples that we see in the paper. It's a glossy, red waxed we call it typey Red Delicious. That's what we have as an image, and most of the youngsters that think of apples think of that apple. So it's hard to change it. It is changing, but it takes a little time, and I think that eventually it will change, and there will be many different varieties, much like many of the other cereals and breads and things of that sort. You go into the store, you'll find those counters are loaded with the varieties. I think eventually that we'll have to recognize that there is a certain faction that do want the Asian selections, and certain that want the European selections.
Let me ask you a little bit about some of your trees. What's the lifespan or the useful life of the trees out here? And was this orchard out here when you first came here? Did you buy an orchard that was already in existence, or did you start from scratch?
No, it was originally. There was a farm. I was born on a fruit farm. My father and mother had started in 1927. My father was selling apples in Fort Wayne, Indiana. My mother was a young secretary, just got off of work, and went by and bought a bushel of apples, liked them so well, she went back for the second bushel. And that was the beginning of me. My dad and mother married a year later, and they bought a farm. This farm is part of the original farm now, or is the original farm. We have added other land around that farm now to where we have a 500-acre complex here. And we're producing sweet cherries, tart cherries, apricots, peaches, pears, plums, apples, nectarines, a whole lot of fruit. We're diversified. We also have some vegetables, and we do a lot of bus tours, and we have retail as well as wholesale. So we're expanding quite a bit. And with internet, I can see another whole future coming on, really, a great, great opportunity.
Well, I think the kind of product that you have is one of the ones that the internet has potentially the most beneficial effect on, because the kind of people that appreciate some of the things you do, they may not be really a lot of them in any one place, but they're everywhere, and people everywhere will have the opportunity to order what you have. Could you tell us about some of your products? Like, one thing I'm particularly interested in, do you have a package or a way that we could buy a few of every variety that you have?
You bet. We get a lot of requests from that, all the nation. We send apples out. I'd like to show you a pack, or have, if it's possible, to have you take this picture of a package of apples that a typical apple that we send.
Now, we work on the internet, and we're all for high tech and everything, but we're also concerned that people are losing touch with the world around them, you know, the natural world, the real world, really. What would you recommend to somebody who's listening to this, who spends all their time staring into a computer screen? What would be good things for them to do to get back in touch with that?
First of all, enjoy a good apple. It's a nice break. Follow that with a glass of cider, or possibly start the day off with a glass of cider, a little bit of apple butter on your toast. Get acquainted with some of the natural products that we have. We're making apple butter without a bit of seasoning. No sugar, salt, seasoning of any sort. We're just seasoning it with many different varieties of apples. And to have an apple cider, a dark apple cider, that's natural, wholesome, is refreshing. And oftentimes people think that that bottle of pop is, they get hooked on it. But there's a lot of natural juices, natural things that are much better for us, I think. I'm sure it would be better for us, and it certainly would help me a lot in the apple industry to know that you're drinking apple cider instead of some of these sugar water.
Well, you raised the subject of apple cider, which I think is an interesting one. There's a lot of things sold on the market as apple juice or apple cider. Some of it's pretty good, and some of it's, you know, not so good, basically. What do you think a person should look for in terms of selecting good cider? And another question, do you make ciders here out of particular single varieties of apples? You know, so in other words, you might have an heirloom apple variety cider. Do you do any of that here?
All of our cider is an heirloom, made from heirloom apples. All of our cider has at least 20, 25 varieties of apples in it. And we use a blend of apples that complement each other. And it's terrible to put one apple variety in and press it into a jug and call it cider. It just isn't right. Sometimes you'll hit a lucky one, but most time it will not be a true good flavored cider. And when you go to a cider mill in the country and you find that the prices are extremely low, there's a reason for that. Usually those are inferior apples. They're getting them for a little or nothing, and they can afford to sell it for a little or nothing. If you're going to get a good cider, you must have a good quality fruit. A good quality fruit means a little higher price. We call our apple cider dark apple cider, trying to distinguish the folks or identify with the folks the difference between apple juice and apple cider. Apple juice is a pasteurized, filtered apple drink. And sometimes it has a preservative, oftentimes not. Sometimes you can buy cider with a preservative. We use nothing. We actually only preserve ours with freezing. as soon as it's made, as soon as we press it, immediately we freeze it, 40 below zero, and we UPS it all over the country, frozen state. We put a little insulated box and freeze it, and we can send it around. It's really a good drink. We also mix natural cherry with our apple, so it makes a cherry apple cider. It's a good one. And again, I mentioned the apple butter. It's natural. There's nothing added. We cook it in the old copper kettle with an old maple paddle right out here in front of the building.
There's lots of beautiful red apples here, but there are also a lot of apples that aren't red. Is there a prejudice these days in favor of red apples? And does it matter whether an apple's red or green? Or
in advertising fruit, vegetables, and so on, red is a good color, and green is not. Green is kind of a neutral. If you have red, green, and yellow together, it's all okay. But we're getting now to where people are acclimated to seeing other than bright red, shiny red. It used to be 20 years ago or 10 years ago, that we were on the kick of having an apple completely red. No, nothing else on it, just red, a red apple. And that's what people are looking for. Today, no, it's different. They're looking for something unusual. This is a russet apple called golden russet, one of the earliest North American apples. The golden russet and the Roxbury russet are two of the most popular North American russet apples. Hoople's Antique Gold, a beautiful apple. Just a beautiful apple. Tastes just as nice as it looks. Beautiful apple. It's a very modern apple. It's not a really, it's a sport from a Golden Delicious originally.
Now when you say a sport, you mean that's a mutation that occurs?
A mutation.
Yes, a mutation of a Golden Delicious that happened in Ohio, and Mr. Hoople was the man that found it. He didn't think much of it, but our good friend Bob Nitschke, who I didn't mention before, but probably one of the greatest of all apple collectors in modern time, found that apple and gave Mr. Hoople credit.
I see these senators are really interesting looking little
oh yes, a senator apple. I like it very much. This year it's probably in its worst form. For some reason or other didn't produce as good and as typey of an apple, but it's a very very nice apple. Resistant to insects and diseases, shows quite a bit of resistance. Excellent apple for keeping. And then it's a beautiful apple on the tree. When it hangs on the tree, it looks like a little Christmas tree with all the little ornaments hanging on it. Just beautiful. There's a certain number of trees like that.
Now, there's a wealthy apple. Will that make you wealthy if you...
The wealthy apple at one time did make folks wealthy. It was a good apple. It's one of the best early apples for applesauce and pies. It's now obsolete. You don't find it. It's fell into the antique collection. Because you just don't find it anymore, but it made one of the finest apple sauces and apple pies, and it was an August apple. It was one of the early apples.
When storing apples, what is, like what they used to do in a root cellar or similar, yeah. What is the technique for doing that and keeping your apples best?
If you were to try to store some of the modern apples in a root cellar, as we used to during the turn of the century, they wouldn't work so well. It's a variety, and that's one of the important things about the Northern Spy. It did accommodate that storage problem. We have others. The Baldwin was a good one. It would keep well. There was one called Ben Davis, Limber Twig. All these apples that you don't hear of today, that one thing about them, they stored well, they would ship well. I don't know if anyone recalls the method of packing apples, but back in the turn of the century, we packed them in barrels. I wasn't here to do it, but I've seen pictures and heard tell that they pack them in barrels and actually beat on the top of the barrel to shut the lid. So it would take a pretty husky apple to get through all that. And they'd roll that barrel around, and finally it would come into some siding somewhere along the railroad track, and people would dish them out of the barrels. They, in fact, did at one time serve them in open gondola cars. They would haul them in open gondolas, letting it be known that they'd be at a certain siding in a small town in Tennessee on a certain day. People would come with their containers and fill it right out of the gondola. So this is a way that we were shipping apples. Today, no way. Today we're in air-conditioned, controlled atmosphere storages that we handle in certain temperatures, very scientific. And the apples are being babied now, where at that time they didn't have refrigeration, had no way of, no transportation that was refrigerated. So it was important that an apple, during the turn of the century, would keep well on its own in natural storage, in a well pit, bank barn, or a basement of a house, something like that. So it was very important. That's the reason I think a lot of these were very important, very popular. And also, did it cook? Did it? Could you see would the family eat it once it was made up into a pie, or was it eat fresh? So that's the secret on Northern Spy and the Baldwin and some of those that I've indicated. I don't believe the Cabal Blanc is quite as good a keeping apple as the two that I mentioned. But the Eichmead's Kernel is quite good. And we have some apples, even more recent apples, that keep quite well. The Fuji is a good apple to keep. And Braeburn, those are both coming on very strong in the market today. And they keep well.
Coming up here, I was thinking about, well, you have many different variety of apples, and rather than going down to the store and getting the same kind, getting Jonathan's or whatever, if I wanted to come up here and get a whole bunch of them and take them back with me, then I might be facing the same kind of problem that they faced back then of wanting to store them. What do you think the best way for a person to store a large number of apples in their home would be for most people?
If your home is in this latitude, in north of, say, the Tennessee-Kentucky line, then it would have to be protected from freezing on certain evenings. And I would say packing them in a cardboard carton would be ideal. Paper sacks, they even have plastic sacks that are designed for storing apples, one that has holes in it along the sides. I think that's the way I would store them. Best, of course, would be refrigeration. If you have an extra room in the refrigerator, stick them back in the refrigerator for storing. That's the ideal. But if you haven't got that, then I would think in some package, not a container like an ice chest, which would have no air exchange. That would be sealed. That would actually cause for mildew. So put it in a container that will protect the apple during the hot part of the day, when it may become 40, 50 degrees, and also protect them from the sub-zero or sub-32, sub-freezing temperatures that might come during the night. And the best way to do that is insulate, and then that maintains a mean temperature, the average between the high and low in the 24-hour period, by putting them into a carton, a cardboard carton, or something that would have an air exchange. Before we had refrigeration, where you could have apples any day of the year, it was important that you had an apple, early apple, because March, April, the apples from last year were gone. The Northern Hemisphere was the only opportunity to get it. Commerce from the Southern Hemisphere. So the earliest apple that you could get in the fall was always a real plus. There was an apple called Transparent, and that Wealthy was another good apple for sauce.
I have an old farm with a Transparent tree.
Transparent tree, yes. Transparent apple tree. Transparent was replaced by an apple called Lodi, L-O-D-I. But some of the old-timers say, no, you'll never make a applesauce out of a Lodi. Let's compare that to Transparent.
Internet 1996 World Exposition. Building a public park for the global village. This has been a production of the Internet Multicasting Service. Your host was Marty Lucas.
Handcrafted by Becknell and Lucas.